I call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 8th, 2016. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present today, Vice Chair Costello and Senator Coghill, as well as myself, Senator Giesel. I believe other members will be joining us very shortly. Thank you to Ann, our recording secretary, and Cody, who's doing the audio for us today. So today, the committee is going to take up Senate Bill 135. This is another of the administration's revenue enhancement proposals, another tax bill. Senate Bill 135 proposes to raise taxes on commercial fishing in the form of an increase to the fish business tax and the fish landing tax. Today we have invited testimony only. We'll certainly have public testimony at some time in the future. And so I welcome Deputy Commissioner Jerry Burnett from the Department of Revenue and Deputy Commissioner Kevin Brooks from the Department of Fish and Game. So welcome, gentlemen. So I will let you go ahead through your PowerPoint and introduce us to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game. I'm going to lead the presentation. Deputy Commissioner Burnett is here to answer questions on the tax side of things since it's a revenue bill. I also have in the room with me Forrest Bowers. He's our Deputy Director from the Division of Commercial Fisheries. If we get too far into any questions on the fleet or impacts there, I might call for a lifeline with him in the room. So without further ado, we'll get started. Bill title, for your benefit, an act requiring the electronic submission of a tax return or report with the Department of Revenue relating to fisheries business tax and fishery resource landing tax, relating to refunds to local governments and providing for an effective date. So there's two types of taxes that are affected by the bill. We'll start out talking about the fisheries business tax. I'll give you a little bit of an overview and some history on that. The fisheries business tax is paid by persons or business who process fish in Alaska or export fish from Alaska.
Excuse me, Mr. Brooks, thank you. I welcome Senator Machicki to the committee. I also want to welcome former Representative Bill Thomas, who's here. Welcome. All right, I'll let you go ahead and continue.
Thank you, ma'am. So paid by persons or business who process fish in Alaska or export fish from Alaska, and it's charged on the price for raw resource or fair market value. A little bit of history on this tax. First came to be as a salmon pack tax in 1913. The tax base expanded to include other fish between 1913 and 1949. In 1951, a fish business license was first required. And then in 1962, municipal sharing began of this type of revenue. And it increased over time from 10 to 50%.
Thank you again. Excuse me, Deputy Commissioner Brooks. Welcome to Senator Wilkowski.
So continuing then on the history, the current tax structure began in 2004, a little over a decade ago. And under that regime, we have a shore-based facility paying 1% for developing species, 3% for established species. Similarly, the floating facilities, floaters, pay the rate is 3% for developing fisheries, 5% for established. And then the salmon canneries pay at 4.5%.
Excuse me, Deputy Commissioner, I may have missed this, but could you clarify what is developing species and established species? How do you determine that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we've provided a document to the committee. We have a letter that the Commissioner of Fish and Game submits to the Commissioner of Revenue every January by statute, and it identifies fisheries. There's criteria set in Title 16. Typically fisheries that don't have a long history, new species. Some in the past we've had sea urchins or just new and developing, so you're trying to give them a kickstart, if you will, to get them established, and then once they meet certain criteria, they would move to the established listing and pay a higher rate.
So I see on the list sea cucumbers, octopus, snails, lamprey. It's actually a four-page list.
That's correct.
All right. Great. Thank you.
And as I mentioned, the criteria are found in Title 1605, 050A10.
Very good, and that is illuminated on the beginning of the front page of that letter. Welcome Senator Stoltz to come
in. Sorry I'm late.
No worries.
The last item on this particular slide, direct marketing license holders pay a shore-based rate, and those would be some of your smaller mom-and-pop operations that would sell fish. So the second type of tax addressed by the bill would be the fish landing tax, and that's levied on the unprocessed value of a fishery resource first landed in Alaska but processed outside. And that value is calculated using a statewide average price that the Department of Fish and Game compiles and then submits to the Department of Revenue. We do that off of our fish ticket, and we call our e-landings database, which is a compilation of all fish tickets that fishermen submit. It's mainly assessed on factory trawlers and floating processors. And like the business tax, it's shared 50% with local governments.
Deputy Commissioner, so these factory trawlers and floating processors must be limited to the ones that are in state waters, not those in federal waters. True or false?
Madam Chair, this is one of the ones I brought my deputy director for. He has a better understanding of the fisheries, and I'd ask him to.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Forrest Bowers, Deputy Director, Division of Commercial Fisheries. The fishery landings tax is assessed on vessels that catch and process fish in federal waters. And it's assessed when they enter state waters to do business like offload or take on fuel. If they never enter state waters, for example, if they steamed up from the lower 48, fished in federal waters, and then went back to the lower 48, they would not be assessed the tax, Madam Chair.
So, Director Bowers, what percentage of these factory trawlers and floating processors ever enter state waters, and therefore those that don't, I guess?
Madam Chair, almost all of them do. These vessels, they'll fly crew into Dutch Harbor or other ports, pick up crew, do offloads. You know, they do multiple trips. They'll come into state waters, offload to cold storage facilities, take on fuel, groceries, repairs, other supplies. So, and I would also add that this isn't just factory trawlers. There's about 25 vessels that are in the what's called the groundfish non-pollock trawl fishery, also known as the Amendment 80 fleet. That's a large component of the folks who pay this tax. There's also about 40 boats that are freezer longliners, and they fish primarily for Pacific cod. And there's a handful of crab and scallop catcher processors around too, and those would be the types of vessels that pay this tax, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for Director Bowers? Senator Michicki.
Just one thing that's unclear to me is how do you arrive at an unprocessed value when a factory trawler is delivering finished product to market?
Through the Chair, Senator Michicki. You have to use the value of the same species that's landed at shore-based plants, and then you back calculate. So you use the weight of the product that's reported sold in the commercial operator's annual report that Deputy Commissioner Brooks mentioned, use the value of the fish landed at shore-based plants, and then it's an estimation, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Michicki? Senator Wilkowski.
Is bycatch assessed in these calculations? Is that tax?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, if it's bycatch that can be legally retained and sold, yes.
What if?
Senator Wilkowski, follow up.
Yeah. If it's something that 1,000 pounds of king salmon that you caught elite and you're not allowed to keep it, is that taxed?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, no. These taxes apply to seafood products that are processed and sold.
So So could I ask a follow-up on that then, Director? So the bycatch, okay, so having been to Dutch Harbor, okay, I see bins of fish that were bycatch, and they, I'm told, are actually donated to food banks. Am I getting that right? And therefore, I guess they wouldn't be taxed since they're not being sold.
Madam Chair, certain species, salmon, as you mentioned, you know, are donated. Salmon that are bycatch in the pollock fishery, those are donated to food banks in some cases, and so they wouldn't be taxed because there isn't an ex vessel price associated with those fish.
Thank you. Further questions for the director? All right. Thank you very much for your answers. Oh, yes. Senator Machicki.
And we've been in this building. I've been here. It's my fourth year. The subject of bycatch is a sore spot for all of us, especially with some of the in-river species that are intercepted out there. Has there ever been discussions about a potential bycatch tax for fish that are landed, even not a marketable species, but true bycatch that are landed onshore as a deterrent, if you will?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, not that I'm aware of. And just to follow up and sort of add to that, you know, these fisheries that we're talking about, you know, the pollock fishery in the Gulf or the Bering Sea, the Amendment 80 fleet, some of these folks that are involved in fisheries where you hear about high bycatch rates, you know, those are federally managed fisheries. Those programs would come about through the North Pacific Fishery Management Council process, and certainly they have been, as you're likely aware, they have taken a number of steps recently to reduce those bycatch rates in those fisheries, but I haven't heard a discussion of, you know, a monetary penalty. I mean, that's essentially what you're referring to. I haven't heard that come up, Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Stoltz.
Yep. Thank you. I guess if you haven't heard it come up, that Alaska has a majority of members. If the Alaskan will is directed, it hasn't come up. Is that a lack of resolve from this and previous administrations? You guys work in fisheries. If we have a majority on the board and they can represent an Alaskan position, not just whatever processors may or may not be here in the room as well, you haven't heard of it, but is there just not a will on almost every administration we've seen?
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, I wouldn't interpret that as...
You identify yourself for the record. Thanks.
Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for Fish and Game. I wouldn't view it as a lack of a will as much as I think the focus has been on trying to reduce it. Commissioner Cotton is the North Pacific Council just wrapped up today. He's on his way back. I'm sure he could be happy to provide a report of some of the efforts that the council has done to try and reduce bycatch. He would also have a good idea of whether it's been considered a tax on a bycatch has been considered in the past, but I could certainly pass it to the commissioner and next time or before the committee could share that information.
That'd be great if you take that question back to him. Thanks.
And Madam Chair,
follow-ups and yourself?
Madam Chair, and all the way to the top of the administration, because when the state wants to affect a position, I've seen it under Commissioner Campbell, the one under Governor Murkowski, Mackay Campbell, we saw some assertiveness, and we haven't seen it under, and I'll point blame in a lot of administrations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Further questions? Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Can you just explain what we're legally allowed to tax? In other words, I know once you go outside, I think 6 miles, we're in federal waters. Can Alaska, and it looks like we're doing it with pollock anyway, but can we tax legally fish that's caught in those areas? Are you allowed to tax that when it comes to land? I mean, how does that work?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, again, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner. You got to the next slide here, so I'll address that first and then maybe hand it over to Deputy Director Bowers. But we have the landing tax is a lot more recent. It was effective in 1994, initially at 3.3%, and now it's 1% on developing and 3% on established. And under the 1999 American Fisheries Act, pollock was specifically addressed. So even if pollock fishery is landed outside, say, as Mr. Bowers pointed out, someone takes that catch and lands it in Seattle, they still have to pay an Alaska tax. So that's one specific example of a very large fishery that it doesn't matter where the landing occurs. And then as Mr. Bowers was talking to earlier, there's not a required landing, but many of these fishermen and processors do come into Alaska waters and land their fish. So I'm not sure if there's more to add to that.
Follow-up, Senator Lopez?
Yeah, so if a Canadian vessel was fishing in Alaskan waters, let's say, and they took their fish back to Canada, do we get a tax on that, or is it only fish that's brought back to Alaska? Is it all fish that's caught in Alaska waters? I mean, help me understand this.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, well, foreign vessels aren't allowed.
Sorry, identify yourself real quick for the
you bet. Forrest Bowers, Deputy Director of Commercial Fisheries Division. Senator Wilikowski, foreign vessels in that case, wouldn't be allowed to fish in Alaska. Only U.S. flag vessels can fish in waters of Alaska. That includes the EEZ, which is waters from 300 to 200 miles offshore. So, but to get to your question, if fish are caught, if the fishing occurs in state waters, 0 to 3, then the tax is assessed, irregardless of where the fish are landed. I mean, that's the tax is due on those fish. If the fish are caught from 300 to 200, if the vessel never enters waters of Alaska, then there would be no tax assessed. But if that vessel transits waters of Alaska, doesn't even have to come ashore, just enters waters of Alaska, then they're liable for that tax. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski.
Does that scenario occur where you have foreign vessels coming in and fishing 300 to 200 and then not coming in? I mean, I can't imagine that happens very often.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, again, foreign flag vessels aren't allowed to fish in Alaska, but say vessels based in the lower 48 of the U.S. would, that would happen very rarely that they would fish in Alaska. Alaska EEZ, and then transit back to lower 48. I think it used to happen more, say, during the halibut derby fishery. Boats would come up from Seattle, fish in the Gulf, and then they would steam back to Bellingham and offload because they get a lot higher price, and it was just a one-shot deal with the derby opening. That's probably the most common scenario I've heard of. It's possible that there could be a handful of boats that maybe do take their last trip back, but some of the seasons, there's such a short break in between those seasons that it might not pay off to steam back to the lower 48 and then back north again. So I think it'd be pretty rare, Madam Chair.
Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick one. Are there any other resource taxes, renewable or non-renewable, that are discreetly shared with the communities as it is with fish tax? Is there any other extractive or renewable? Because I sure can't think of any. Maybe. And is this, Madam Chair, a vestige of maybe a political compromise that is outlived as we're looking at funding schools and funding that? Is it as if the North Slope Borough got a 50% rake off of the severance tax, I'm not sure they'd be happy, and or
But is that the right state policy, and or is that just maybe a vestige of a unnecessary political agreement, say 25 years ago or longer? And that's and maybe it needs to be go into the revenue and divided equally among all Alaskans, as we do all of other resources, whether it's through the permanent fund, is pretty pro rata equal, as long as you don't commit a crime or for now. But I can't think of it. Maybe that should be a policy we should look at. We certainly would probably be up in arms if one section of the state was taking all the oil revenues, whether it was Cook Inlet or the North Slope, or half of them off the top.
Mm-hmm. Deputy Commissioner, do you want to try that?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Stoltz, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for Fish and Game. We had a slide earlier. So municipal revenue sharing started in 1962 at 10%, and it grew to 50 over time. And within the revenue source book that they have online at the tax division website, it gives more of a chronological rendering, if you will, of how the sharing of taxes occurred. And we could certainly provide that. It's available online, but we could certainly provide that back to the committee, too. As far as other taxes, I really don't know, and maybe the folks from the Department of Revenue do, but
yeah. Senator Stoltz, would you like the Department of Revenue to come up? We have Director Alper here.
I would rather explore. I think I've put the concern on there. I was 1 year old in 1962, and I not only was I not old enough, I didn't have a vote in the legislature back then either, and other decisions were made, and the demography of Alaska was quite a bit different, and I think this is an open discussion the governor has started, and we would never think of just giving one area of the state that before we put money into the general fund, and maybe it's not even appropriate that it doesn't go into the general fund, and then there's a policy debate of how we distribute all revenue sharing as we do with oil wealth, mining wealth, and I wish we had more of it if we didn't discourage it so much. That's editorial. I better get off, Madam Chair. But I think we're in an open discussion. We should be talking about everything and why maybe it is vestigial at Eastern. If you look at the map of where folks came from in 1962, the Mat Valley barely had one member of the Senate, let alone a member of the House. And there certainly Southeast had much more, and so did coastal communities had multiple senators. That was pre-Baker versus Carr. And we had senators elected by region. Trees instead of people. I mean, so we're in a whole different paradigm here. And just, I think everything should be open. And we're talking about budget decisions. Well, let's make sure all the money gets in the pot, and we can make them fair for all Alaskans.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. You're right. It is a policy discussion that we're having. Senator Machicki, you had a question.
Well, just two things. I'm very interested in the history. If coastal communities are providing some sort of service that it's in compensation for, and I'd like to know if there are other taxes that are shared. I'm sure it's not happenstance that the decision is made. I'd like to know why, and if it's something we should defend or something that should be deposited into the general fund. But the question I was getting at is, is there any way the department can quantify the landings of fish, even from the pollock fishery, that did not enter state waters? It'd be interesting to know if we should apply for a linear inch of federal waters out to 200 miles or something. So I'd like to understand what that proportion looks like, if that's possible.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, we can certainly look into that and see what we can come up with for you.
That was Director Bowers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Costello.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to dovetail on what Senator Stoltz said and ask a question. I think the policy discussion around these taxes the governor's asking us to consider is really significant, and I think so far that's what's been missing for me, and I think we are trying to talk about that, but I'd like to hear from the administration, what was the policy discussion that was surrounding this tax proposal? And if there wasn't one, I mean, that actually is a fair answer also, because we're not getting that information. So I was just curious, is this just part of a fairness approach? And if so, what policy is that?
Through the chair, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for Fish and Game. I think I would ask Deputy Commissioner Burnett to step back up, because the Department of Revenue was involved in the development of all eight. I think there's eight initiatives. And I think there was, Senator Costello, you mentioned a fairness issue as in spreading that around. I think there was some consideration given to that. It's increasing an existing tax by 1%. We've heard some folks say, well, if you're paying 3, that's a 33% increase. If you're paying 5, it's a 20% increase. But those are valid points. We're going to... I drew a blank on what I was just going to say, so maybe I'll hand it off to Jerry.
For the record, Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue, and to Senator Costello through the chair. There were discussions about each of those issues. You'll see with this tax, rather than sharing the additional tax with local communities, it all goes to the general fund. With other taxes, similar, like with the commercial passenger vessel tax increase, that the new part is going to the general fund, not additional shared taxes. It was a lot of discussion about making sure that there was fairness, that is, that we didn't hit one industry and not other industries, I think each of those things were discussed. The exact amounts, clearly a person could argue that the tax should be greater or less than. I think we've hit on these amounts trying to create a balance of fairness and impact. Some of these industries take more general fund support than others do. This in particular, commercial fishing, there's impacts on the agency budgets from these. So all of those things were considered, and exactly that discussion, it's impossible to share, but certainly be happy to bring the Commissioner of Revenue back. He was in another meeting today and couldn't be here. But those discussions are very relevant discussions, and again, with the shared taxes, each of these shared taxes is in the budget bill every year. The legislature does have the ability to discuss those amongst, along with the rest of the budget, where those impacts are.
Madam Chair, follow up,
Senator Costello. Yes.
Was there any discussion about how this tax would affect our competitiveness outside the state? Because to me, that's an important element. Is are we shooting ourselves in the foot with any of these proposals?
Through the chair to Senator Costello, as you can imagine, the fish caught in Alaska can only be caught in Alaska or in Alaskan waters. The pricing on the fish products as it goes to the lower 48 is going to be they're priced as a commodity when they're sold outside of Alaskan market. And so the tax actually is going to be impacting the industry within Alaska rather than the price of the fish and the competitiveness of the fish in the marketplace. So it's more a matter of ensuring that the state budget has sufficient revenues to manage the fisheries properly than it is to create the ability to catch these fish and maintain the species, rather than it is a matter of competitiveness in the marketplace.
Follow-up, Senator Costello. Welcome, Senator Stedman. Thanks for joining us. So I have a follow-up, Deputy Commissioner Burnett. So we actually last week reviewed a study by ICER, which actually demonstrated that the commercial fishing industry brings in more revenue to the state than it costs to regulate them. Did the Department of Revenue do some fiscal modeling on that?
I'm sure that we did, in fact, look at those issues. But again, it is a matter of how much revenue does the whole state have and where does this money go? So if you have insufficient money, you're going to have to make cuts in every area. So there should be benefit to all industries from a tax on any industry, ultimately.
Okay, I'm trying to follow that. The committee would like to see that modeling because, frankly, this is a policy change, and this committee is very interested in how these changes in policy affect Alaska families, Alaska businesses, and Alaska jobs. So when we spend months, years discussing oil tax policy change, we get those kinds of modeling, that kind of modeling data. So we kind of need it in this as well. If you don't get it urgently provided to this committee, you certainly will hear it in the Finance Committee. But since it's a resource that taxation could diminish the extraction of, this committee, being interested in resources and maximum benefit to the people, would like to see that modeling as well. Further questions on this particular slide? Senator Machicki.
Mr. Burnett, I just wanted to go back on your commodity cost statement. If you can clarify, I mean, you still have to admit that a unit cost either makes a fishery viable or not. And when you're adding to any cost per unit in state, you potentially jeopardize marginal fisheries, right?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, clearly that's why we have a lower tax on developing fisheries than we do on others, because that unit cost can be important. And yes, what I was talking about in terms of competitiveness in selling the product as opposed to competitiveness in the ability to produce the product, and perhaps I didn't make that clear, that yes, the commercial fisherman is going to have an additional cost as a result of this, and so if in a low price environment, perhaps it would have an effect on their ability to commercially produce the fish.
Follow-up?
No, that's perfect. Thanks.
Senator Stoltz.
Madam Chair, this is probably more complicated than a quick answer, but we've heard a lot of state affairs. We've been doing discussion on the governor's plan, and there have been lots of suggestions about taxing outsiders, whether on income tax or other resource tax. And if revenue can, if not now, come back to us with some discussion about some of the constitutional issues from our own Supreme Court on the disparity in taxes and what advice you would give us along with the Department of Law on is that the public is bringing those up as suggestions they're offering, and it would be helpful for us to understand what our limitations are, whether even if we wanted to go on that route. And income tax has come up as to charge the outsiders, and certainly there's a large contingent every year, UFA, when they make their Chamber of Commerce reports here in Alaska about their economics, and they make the same one in Seattle, just a little bit different story about how much we're benefiting Maria Cantwell's state and Governor Inslee's state and Senator Murray's state, all these folks that are Alaskan friends. But we hear that, and I don't think they want us to see those reports, but we do see the impact, and that's, I think we're going to be hearing that discussion and as prepared as we could be, knowing what the parameters of what we're even able to do if that was a policy direction. I didn't want to make that so long, but I had to squeeze some editorial in there, too.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. And on that issue, I saw a statistic recently in Bristol Bay. I think it was a stunning number. I think it was 81% of the permit holders, or some very high number, were non-residents. And I'm just wondering if maybe you can go back, or if you've looked at, is there any way we can maybe tweak our tax structure so that we figure out a way to get more of those permits in Alaskan hands? I know it's challenging, but boy, 81% of the permit holders out there being non-residents, and when you've got people who could really benefit from that in that community, I think would really benefit from that.
To the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I think that's part of the response to Senator Stoltz's statement or question, which is people need to understand what the limitations are on differential taxes for out-of-state and in-state taxpayers.
Thank you. So just to tag on what Senator Wilikowski just asked, Deputy Commissioner Brooks, do you know if that's 81, if it's 81%? I've heard it's very high. I wondered if we could...
Madam Chair, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for Fish and Game. It's not a number I have in any material with me, but it's one that we can go check on.
Okay, that'd be great. We'd appreciate the answer to that. Senator Stedman.
On that point, Madam Chairman, my understanding of that in America is that would include Alaskans outside of the bay in that 80-some percent figure, but we can have the department put a fine point on it, how many residents are residents of the Bay Area, how many are Alaska residents sitting in Anchorage, in Matsu, and other areas, maybe even Fairbanks. I know clearly I have some in Southeast. And then how many are those scoundrels that are outside the state?
I thought the scoundrels were in Ketchikan.
Deputy Commissioner Brooks.
Madam Chair, we'll do our best to see, to make that distinction between non-local versus non-resident and come back with the best information we can for the committee.
Great, thank you. We appreciate that. Further questions at this point? All right, I'll let you proceed to the next slide.
So we did jump around in some of our answers, but we'll work it through here. Wanted to talk next in the presentation about how the distribution of the tax occurs. We've talked about this already. It's shared. We'll get into a little more detail on that. It's shared on the calculated tax. The state bears the offset of any credits that might occur. So to be clear on that, the local governments get a full 50% of a calculated tax, and the state gets typically a little bit less because the credits come off of our share.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Stoltz.
Just a quick clarification point. Use the word communities instead of cities. Are these incorporated areas, or what is the definition of community?
Through the chair, and Senator Stoltz, Kevin Brooks again. In my next slide or two here, I'm going to have a real specific answer to that question because it varies whether it, in different circumstances. So if I could follow that up.
Thank you.
Sure.
In fact, back on that previous slide, 50% goes to communities and boroughs where the processing and or the fishery resource landing took place. If it's an incorporated city, if an incorporated city is within an organized borough, the 50% shareable amount of the tax is divided equally between the city and the organized borough. If the processing or landing takes place outside of an incorporated city or organized borough, 50% of the tax collected is dispersed to communities through an allocation program under the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Stoltz.
I see the Deputy Commissioner has the notes on his slide, but ours doesn't, and if we can get some of the detail that he's reading.
That'd be great. All right. Thank you.
So some idea for the last 3 years of how much money we're talking about, and this gets to one of the questions that we had from Senator Costello earlier. So you can see from this slide the fisheries business tax revenue, 44.4, 53, and 45.1 going back from 2015 to 2013. And you can see how that's shared. Some of the discussion, I think, on the increase was, you know, what does a single percentage increase generate? And you'll see from a fiscal note, it's about $18 million. And then I know from the expenditure side, the department has always looked at what is our general fund budget for the Division of Commercial Fisheries and other related costs within the department, whether it's Board of Fish, other management programs that might have a relation to the expenditure, but there's also other expenditures for enforcement and Department of Law and the courts and those kinds of things. So I know at OMB they've done some effort to estimate those costs. We use it when we look at the updating the Carlson case differential every 3 years, and that's a rate that we charge non-residents on licenses, and there's some legal standing for doing that. And so there is that consideration. Now, what are kind of the total cost of government, not just fish and game? and how much tax is generated. And currently, these taxes do not, when you add them all up and after sharing, they do not cover the costs of government. Then there's the broader question, I think, that Deputy Commissioner Burnett alluded to, is should there be an additional contribution to the general fund that's available for other costs of government? And that is entirely a policy call. Mm-hmm. So the first look is what are the current state expenditures within Fish and Game and then outside of Fish and Game, and then that broader conversation factors in as well.
Very good. Senator Coghill.
For those who have the patience to listen in on what we're talking about, the Carlson differential might be interesting, because quite often, especially when it comes to taxation, we talk about lifting the tax higher for out-of-state residents and in-state residents. Could you give just a brief overview of that?
Yes, through the Chair, Kevin Brooks here. So for years, decades, the state often charged non-residents on a 3-to-1 basis from what they would charge a resident for commercial crew member licenses, CFE limited entry permits, those kinds of things. And there was a court case that took a long, long time to settle. It went back to the Supreme Court a couple times, but in the end, the Supreme Court ruled that the state could charge a premium to non-residents, but it had to be based on something other than just an arbitrary 3-to-1 or something like that. And so what the state does every 3 years, we have a basis for charging, and it's things, state investment in infrastructure for docks and harbors and things like that, costs that the state has that are not shared by non-residents. So we establish that. All state agencies that have related costs are factored in, and then we, through OMB's calculations, they establish a differential. It's currently about $265 from memory that we would charge a non-resident in addition to what we would charge a resident. So there's a base fee in statute. Let's say for a crew member license is $60 for anybody, but a non-resident has to pay that $265 differential, and that's based on this Carlson case that I referred to. So
thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Senator Michiki.
Is there a reason why the proportion used after the Carlson case might not be considered for landing taxes as well?
Through the Chair and Senator Michiki, I don't have an answer for you. It would be one I would want to consult with the Department of Law on, or I don't know if Deputy Commissioner Burnett has anything to add to that.
Yeah, through the Chair, Senator Michiki, this is Jerry Burnett, Department of Revenue. Taxes are different than fees. If fees have a cost directly associated with them, and taxes don't, and I'm sure the Department of Law can give us the advice specifically, but from what I know about tax law, you have much less ability to charge a differential between in-state and out-state taxpayers. And we will get information from the Department of Law.
Follow up?
Yes, please. I wonder if one could think about getting creative with sort of a grandfather tax, like we saw with some of the property taxes in California and Florida, where they locked in a rate. Anyway, that may be worth looking into. That created a substantial differential for new entrance. Anyway, thank you.
All right, Senator Wilkowski, followed by Senator Costello.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe we're not talking about new taxes on our fish. We're talking about fees on our fish.
Perhaps.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski. Senator Costello.
Thank you. Credits be tied to Alaska residents? I mean, we've done that before in other programs where we offer credits to, to Alaskans, and then non-Alaskans are not eligible for those.
Through the Chair, Senator Costello, I'll have to get specific legal advice on what the bounds are on that. Again, just
follow up. So I think it was Deputy Commissioner Brooks, who said OMB had done an estimate of what the state of Alaska's regulatory costs were, or costs for administering this. Do I recall that correctly? Did you comment on that a few minutes ago?
Madam Chair, Kevin Brooks, my comment was that we do an estimate of the management costs, actually. It includes some regulatory costs for the Board of Fish and things, but it's kind of an all-in state operating budget estimate of costs related to commercial fishing.
Is that public information? Is it something?
Certainly.
Okay, I'd like to see that. Further questions at this point? All right, I'll let you go to the next slide.
Madam Chair, if I might, I had some numbers I was going to share getting to the 81% question. I have so in the drift, and this is for 2014, in Bristol Bay, the drift gill net fishery, we had 18.7% local, 25.8% non-local, but still Alaska, and then 55.5% non-resident. It's about 45-55 total, Alaska versus non-Alaskan. On the set gill net, 34.5% local, 29.9% non-local, 35.6% non-resident. So you have a smaller percentage of non-residents in the set gill net versus the drift gill net fishery. And I'll summarize that and maybe get it to your staff if that's okay.
That would be great. Thank you. And I'll get it to committee members.
Okay. So we'll move on to the next slide. We talked about the fisheries business tax. The fisheries landing tax is not as large, but you can see similar to the business tax, it's shared from the amount of tax collected has varied from $8.4 million to $13.4 million over the last 3 years.
So, Deputy Commissioner, that wide variation must be based, of course, on the value of the fish, the price of fish those particular years. True or false?
Madam Chair, I believe it would be a factor of both price and volume.
I guess
but offset by credits as well. There are some credits that factor into these that aren't as, clean or neat as you see on the fisheries business tax, and there's more variability, I guess, in the landing tax credits, and I'm not sure if that's a factor of timing or just what that is. But
as I look at these numbers, obviously the value varies a great deal, like some of our other natural resources. Just an observation. Any questions about this slide, Senator? Senator Machicki.
How much detail can you give us on credits? Could you provide to the chair on what types of credits? It may be something you can't give us a specific person or company, but perhaps you can just give us the types of credits and where they are being paid in species or developing species.
Yeah, through the chair, to Senator Machicki, we can give you whatever level of detail can be done without allowing us to identify specific taxpayers. And so to the extent we can break that down, we can get that to the committee. Thank you.
All right. I'll let you go on to the next slide.
Okay. So getting to the proposed increase that you'll see in the bill, in summarizing that, the 1% increase, again, I'm starting with the business tax on established fisheries on the floating, we go from 5 to 6%. Salmon cannery, 4.5% to 5.5%. Shore base, 3% to 4%. Then on the developing fisheries, floating is 3% to 4%, and shore base was left at 1%. And if you look in the tax that's generated, In rough terms, you're talking about $50 million of total tax. There's about $200,000 of tax related to these developing fisheries, so they're very small as a percentage of what we're talking about. And I think that's some consideration is given to just the developing nature. Once they get established, then they would move into the other category.
No questions. All right.
Continuing then with the landing tax, again, you'll see the same situation established. This goes from 3 to 4, and the developing stays at 1%.
Deputy Commissioner, Senator Wilkowski had a question.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know if you have this information or a way to get this information, but it seems to me that there are fisheries that are largely non-resident, that have non-resident workers coming in from out of state working on them, and that's not benefiting Alaska very much. They're taking our fish, they're not hiring our workers, and the fish is leaving the state for the most part. And I'm wondering if there's a way that you can target fisheries that, because my desire in this is to not hurt the mom and pop small commercial fishermen who are not making very much but are just getting by, but is there a way that we can target this a little bit more so that we're getting at those who are coming up from outside, taking our fish and leaving and not hiring Alaskans?
Through the chair and Senator Wilkowski, this is Kevin Brooks, just to be clear, these boats coming from down south are paying a tax. And as we heard from Deputy Director Bowers, it's more the exception than the rule, I guess, that they wouldn't pay because they're coming into port, they're crossing Alaska waters, and as soon as that happens, it triggers a taxing event. So, and then we have the pollock consideration, even if it's landed, which is a very big fishery, even if that pollock is landed in another state, it's going to be taxed in Alaska. So they do, now, having said that on the taxation, they do hire, and you're getting to your point of hiring, I think there are a lot of non-resident employees, if you will, on these floating processors and that kind of thing. And could you be so surgical on the rates to dial it up for one and not for another? I'd be at a loss at this table to answer that one. But I don't want to leave the committee with the impression that fish taken either in the 0 to 3 or 3 to 200 is not getting taxed in Alaska, because I think that is the case in most cases.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, I guess it just comes down to data, because I've seen the non-resident reports over the years where that you have some processing plants that have 100% non-residents, 100%. I'm sure you've seen them. And so I guess I'm wondering if there's more data that's available that we could look at this. And I'm not saying you go in and pick this processor or not that. I'm saying there are probably entire areas where, yeah, they're paying a small tax right now, but there's no benefit to Alaska. There's none. They're taking our fish. They're from out of state. They're not hiring Alaska workers. All the fish, or most of it's leaving the state. And I'm just wondering if there's a way you can be a little more surgical in getting those, a fair tax for Alaskans.
Through the chair, and Senator Wilkowski, I certainly understand your point. I think one of the other initiatives is a different type of tax that would get at some of those employees too, and I think that was part of that policy discussion that was in the deliberations in bringing that forward.
Thank you. Senator Machicki, followed by Senator Stoltz, then Senator Stedman.
So let me, can you clarify one thing? We've kind of gone back and forth. I'm trying to understand the pollock issue. You're saying that pollock in federal waters, whether or not it crosses state waters, is taxed upon landing in the lower 48.
Okay, that's correct.
So just to go a little further with Senator Wilkowski's question, instead of areas, what about species? Is there any reason you couldn't have a different tax rate? I mean, clearly pollock is a different creature as far as non-resident participation. Could you tax species differently, which would actually sort of do what Senator Wilkowski's talking about without hitting... not too many of my friends are in a commercial pollock fishery in their little 32-foot gillnet. So is that something that's possible? And I'm not talking about anything that really significantly hits anyone. It's just a question to understand if you could target by species.
Maybe I can take this one through the chair, Senator Machicki. This is Jerry Burnett, Department of Revenue.
we could probably design a tax that was very surgical, very specific, and very complicated, and fairly expensive to administer. Could we do it in such a way as to provide that benefit? Something we can look at. But I understand where you're going, and I think we can take a look at that. It does add additional complexities for both the taxpayer and the tax division, and it would not come without a cost for administering. But yet, is it possible? I think you can probably tax different species at different rates.
Follow-up, Senator Machicki.
I'm not sure about complexity on an electronic tax form that has the same rate for every species but pollock, right? So if there were only a species or two that were more specifically non-resident in participation at a very high rate, it may be worth evaluating.
Thank you. Senator Stoltz.
I'll pass. Senator Machicki asked part of my question, so
all right.
I'll yield.
Senator Stedman.
Oh, just a note of caution. I think after the Carlson case left a pretty bad taste in our mouth, decades of litigation, tens of millions in a check we had to write. The only one that came out of it was a lawyer. A lot of the participants had passed away. So it was quite the mess. So whatever we do, we don't want to go back and repeat that and leave that legacy for several legislatures out in front of us. And we got to respect the commerce law of the land. We're America. People can come and go and work where they want.
Madam Chair, Kevin Brooks, Senator Stedman's point. So the Carlson case was tied to the Interstate Commerce Act, and that was the basis of it. And so his point is a good one, and a lot of lawyers worked on that case for over two decades, and it was a long, tedious process for sure.
Further questions? All right, seeing none, I'll let you go to the next slide. Oh, pardon me, Senator Machicki.
Clarifying comment. Carlson case was based on a differential. We're not talking about a differential. My suggestion was related to species and the same rate for every participant. So.
So we touched on this in some earlier comments too, but the under the new 1% or the increased 1%, the proposal in the bill is to not share that with the communities, but the entire 1% would go to the general fund. After that, we would still share the remaining or the existing tax, if you will, exactly like it is now.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Stoltz.
Just a technical question. Would that 1% go straight into the general fund? Is there any imputation of the tax credits, or is it just a
straight general fund deposit?
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, the additional 1% goes to the general fund. I just don't know if it's subject to credits, and so I'd have to defer to Deputy Commissioner Burnett on that one.
Yeah, this is Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue, the chair to Senator Stoltz. The credits would still be coming out of this other part of the state share, so this wouldn't, on its face, increase the amount of credits total, but we could have different amounts of credits, and so that 1% is assumed in our analysis to be a full 1% additional tax.
Yeah, follow-up, Senator.
Just clarifying, that's the administration's intent as the sponsors of this rough draft we're dealing with, and we could change that provision and clarify it or other parts of existing law in this vehicle. That's a statement.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Yes, Senator Machicki.
Is there a potential to segregate that 1%? I know you can't go negative on the credits, if I'm not mistaken. So why couldn't you segregate that 1% as going directly to the general fund and not including those other credit accounts on the way to the GF.
Through the chair, Senator Machiki, there's nothing to prevent that. Just like we currently take the credit all out of the state share and hold the local governments harmless on their share.
All right, next slide.
Madam Chair, Kevin Brooks again. So we wanted to give some context to other tax rates in a different jurisdiction. The only one we have is, the only one there is Washington. It's the only other state with a tax specific to fish. It ranges from under 0.1%, 0.09% to 5.62% of the value at point of landing. And I'm sure the tax rate factors into, someone's decision to land their fish or maybe on their last run, as we heard from Deputy Director Bowers, on their last run, am I going to go to Dutch Harbor and drop this off, or am I going to steam south? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure tax rate factors into that consideration on an individual.
Senator Machiki.
Second bullet's sort of what I was talking about as well.
Yes.
That the rate, just for the record, the rate in Washington does depend on species.
Slide 15.
Yes. So I mentioned this earlier. You'll see a fiscal note with this bill that shows $18 million of additional tax revenue that would be derived from a 1% increase. That estimate is based on the fall 2015 revenue forecast book.
Deputy Commissioner, how close do the revenue forecasts for the fisheries come each year in actual what actually happens and what they predicted?
Madam Chair, this is Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. I'd have to go back and take a look at that. I couldn't tell you clearly. Fish runs vary every year, and prices vary every year. So it's not going to be exact ever. It's probably closer than it is with oil in the last couple of years.
Could you verify that for us?
Yes.
That'd be good. Thank you. All right.
Madam Chair, Kevin Brooks again. We had on that earlier slide, too. We showed the three-year history. That's a short window, obviously, but there was more stability in the business tax than in the landing tax from what we saw on that.
Senator Stoltz, question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My friends in the commercial fishing industry, throughout the year, they're talking about the price adjustments and getting additional checks. How do you guys track with that, and how do you... Maybe that sounds like it's an ongoing thing already, but
through the chair and Senator Stoltz, Kevin Brooks here. I think I would ask Forrest Bowers, our deputy director from Commercial Fisheries. He can speak to how that, because there are multiple payments throughout the year, and how that process works.
Forrest Bowers, Deputy Director, Division of Commercial Fisheries, through the chair, Senator Stoltz. The tax is assessed on the volume of fish that's reported on the commercial operator's annual report, and that's filed annually. And so, that takes into account the post-season adjustments. I mean, that's part of the report that we receive from the processors, Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Stoltz? Okay.
It led me the path I wanted to go.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair, proceeding then with the presentation on slide 16. This is Kevin Brooks again from the Department of Fish and Game. This additional tax would require the Department of Revenue to update its tax revenue management system and revenue online, which allows taxpayers to file a return online and update the current tax return forms. Revenue estimates a one-time implementation cost of $100,000 to recreate tax forms and reprogram and test the tax system. This is from, as I understand it, a prior year capital project and would not be a cost that you'd see on a fiscal note.
and they do not anticipate any additional costs to administer the program. And in fact, I think by going with the requirement to do online returns, they're anticipating some efficiencies to be gained from that.
Madam Chair, if I could, I think this really is going to be
Deputy Commissioner Burnett.
Yeah, this is Deputy Commissioner Burnett, Department of Revenue. I believe this will be a new cost, and it will show on the fiscal note as a one-time cost, but again, no additional cost to administer the program ongoing as a result of this. But we, well, we did have an existing capital budget. It did not include enough sufficient funds to do this. And this is more expensive than some of our other taxes because it has the revenue sharing. It has to be split out in more different ways than some of the others.
So a question about the electronic filing. Is that something that these taxpayers are doing now? Do all of them do it? What percentage? Will it be additional barrier for them?
Madam Chair, a number of taxpayers do file online right now. Online filing is available. Mm-hmm. And we don't see this as a barrier. There is a ability to get a waiver if for some reason you can't file online. And I think for most of these are existing businesses that would have the capability of filing online. There are maybe some small mom and pop is that maybe out with a troll permit and selling their fish to the local grocery store or something in a small town that might be paying with a paper form, but they could get a waiver from a requirement here. And so I don't see it as a barrier.
Okay. Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any bar from having a different assessment, a fee, a tax assessment, or a fee by a region where there's a higher economic value or a higher opportunity cost? And are we, there's a maybe a Chinook species in a urban area, urbanized area, has greater economic value, but it may not be reflected in just the poundage and commercial costs. Either through fees or assessments.
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, this is Jerry Burnett again. I believe we could make this a very complicated tax. Again, there may be a way to do that. We could look at that because I do understand what you're getting at. You're talking about some fish that are direct marketed, for example, and might be being sold for a much higher value per pound than a fish caught in a gillnet fishery or a seine fishery, for example. And so I don't know that we've examined how difficult or how we would do that, but it's something that we can think about.
Well, Senator Stoltz.
Sometimes things worthwhile are worth spending a little more time on, and it mm-hmm. may be able to correct some of the other conundrums we have all in one little bill.
Thank you. All right, I'll let you go to the next slide.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin Brooks again. So how this particular bill fits into the broader initiative that's been presented by the governor. We wanted to give you some context. The FY16 budget is $5.2 billion. FY17 baseline revenue after proposed legislation, the Permanent Fund Protection Act, would be $3.3 billion. Revenue from existing taxes and fees would generate $850 million. Earnings on savings, $135 million to bring that revenue just under $4.3 billion. Then on the spending reduction side, we have continued cuts in addition to what occurred in the 16 budget proposed for 17 is $140 million. I think Director Pat Pitney from OMB has been talking about the governor's package for all the state agencies. We have reform in oil and gas tax credits. I think this committee has heard some presentations on that at $400 million. And then priority investments
of $40 million of spend. So that would be a net reductions of $500 million under that scenario. From the initiatives that are being discussed, you can see them listed there. Fishing is the second one. As we discussed, it would generate an estimated $18 million annually. All of the initiatives together would generate potential new revenue of $457 million. So total with reductions in new revenue brings us just over that $5.2 billion number. Those are very aggregated numbers, obviously, and they come from a number of sources.
Questions? All right. Seeing none, we'll go on to slide 19.
We talked about this earlier. The main impact is on commercial fishing operations without much of a tax burden likely to be passed on the buyers, and that's a factor of how the price is set, and we had some discussion of that earlier in the meeting. I can walk through a sectional. It wouldn't take long if the committee is interested and tell you how the bill is constructed.
We have time for that. Why don't you go ahead? Yes, Senator Machicki had a question first.
Just fundamentally disagree with slide 19. I think that's it's a shallow statement. It affects folks all the way up and down the supply chain, could result in some of our resources not being harvested. There are many effects. I mean, the important thing on every one of these taxes is that we truly evaluate the effects across the board, and I worry that slide simplifies a more complex issue. And I don't need to go on any further than that. I think you know what I mean, and you probably agree, but I'd like to see more depth in that slide if it came back to us.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. We have asked them to produce some additional data. So, all right, a sectional.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin Brooks, and point is duly noted. Thank you. So in Section 1 of the bill, it gets to what Deputy Commissioner Burnett was talking about. It adds a $25 or 1% tax penalty for failure to file electronically, but it does provide for an exemption. So it's an incentive to do that electronic filing. Section 2 requires electronic submission of tax return, license applications, and other documents submitted to the Department of Revenue. Section 3 increases the three different tax rates within the fisheries business tax by 1%. And we talked about those in one of the earlier slides. Section 4 increases the tax rate within the fisheries business tax for developing fish species processed by a floating processor from 3 to 4%, with the rate remaining at 1% for developing fish species processed by a shore-based business. Section 5 increases the tax rate within the fisheries business tax for direct marketers from 3 to 4%, and we're keeping the rate at 1% for developing fish species sold by direct marketers. 6 is conforming language related to the requirement to submit returns or reports electronically. Deletes a requirement that taxpayers submit their returns to the department in Juneau, Department of Revenue. Section 7 establishes that the revenue from the 1% tax increase is deposited in the general fund, but the remaining revenue shall be shared with the municipalities per the currently existing formula. Section 8 then turns to the fisheries landing tax, increases that rate for fish species other than developing from 3 to 4%, while keeping the 1% rate for developing fish species. Section 9 establishes that the revenue from the 1% tax increases deposited in the general fund, the remaining revenue shall be shared with municipalities per the currently existing formula. And then Section 10 is similar, but this one deals with the boroughs because they exist in two places. Section 11 is transitional language allowing regulations. Section 12
make Section 11 effective immediately, and then Section 13 makes the rest of the bill effective on July 1st of 16. That's a brief sectional analysis for you, Senator Giesel.
Very good. Thank you. Questions? Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed on the OMB section of this, talking about the how the budget gap is filled and the reform of the petroleum, get oil and gas credits. Did the departments have discussion on analyzing the tax credits for the fishing industry? Because we've been on a pretty steady decline, irrespective of price on the amount that gets into the general fund. It's down into the low 20s, and for a $3-4 billion industry, I don't think we would tolerate that from any other industries that had that much commercial volume. And it's, you know, was it this 22 or 23? I forget the number, but it's below 25 million that gets into the unrestricted general funds. And so, did you have the similar discussion on tax credits and revenue?
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, I don't believe that the discussion was the same. We have looked at the tax credits for fish on a regular basis. We may recall that last year there was a indirect expenditure report that was done, and our staff is following up on each of the things in that report.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Senator Stoltz.
Is the Department of Revenue happy with the proportion, and it's you think it's fixed? I mean, or it's functioning best for the people of Alaska?
To the Chair, Senator Stoltz, I'm not sure I can answer that right off here.
Madam Chair, just to follow up, I think that should be part of the discussion as the other other credits, whether it's we had the discussion on film, we have the discussion on oil, and it should be part of it. Whether or not we take action or not, it should be the whole part of the compendium of the discussion we have on the government take out of a multi-billion-dollar industry that the people of Alaska own. We heard that verbiage as well.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. We'll submit that question. Senator Stedman.
More of a comment, Madam Chairman. In the budget situation we're in, at 3.5 to 4.2 billion underwater, anybody that gets a credit from the state of Alaska, I would not go to the bank and start making long-term plans for receiving them, because we're going to have to make some changes. And removing credits and let the free markets flow on all industries, whether it's fishing or mining or oil or just pick your industry, is normally beneficial in the long run. Let the markets work. The more we muck them up, and the more we try to incentivize them, the more we muck them up, it seems like, over the years. So just a general caution, there shouldn't be any sacred cows on credits applied to the state treasury so we can work our way out of this mess.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. I would add that Milton Friedman would agree with you 100%. Yes, Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Kevin Brooks. What I have in my notes is that we're going to quantify the credits, list them out by types and amount generated, and we'll provide that to the committee.
That'd be great. Thank you. Further questions, comments? I had a question, Deputy Commissioner Brooks. What input did ADF&G have to the writing of this bill?
Madam Chair, I know that Commissioner Cotton was involved with a group of, I guess you'd call it a subgroup of the cabinet, involving the Commissioner of Revenue and the Commissioner of the affected department. I think that's how. So we have a fisheries tax, and so the Commissioner of Fish and Game was consulted. I was not part of those meetings, but I know that he was actively engaged in the discussions, and you know, as we had some of the discussions here earlier about cost of departments for managing the resource and things like that. I know that the commissioner brought that kind of information to the discussion.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. With no further questions, thank you very much, both of you, for presenting. We've asked some questions. So we look forward to those answers. We'll be setting the bill aside in anticipation of those. Thank you. That concludes our meeting today. Our next meeting will be on Wednesday, February 10th. The committee will receive an update from the Attorney General and the Commissioner of Fish and Game on the Endangered Species Act listings. So at this time, the meeting will be adjourned. At the record reflect, it is 4:49 p.m.